Connect. People. Potential. Technology.
As a venture, private equity investor, board member, and lecturer at the Startup Academy, he has a vast experience in investing in companies. Fulvio Macarone has a unique experience from successfully leading a team to deploy and manage a 2 billion euro private equity portfolio, including funds, co-investments, and direct investments for one of Europe's leading family offices. With his truly global investment background, having invested in Asia, Latin America, USA, Russia, and Europe, growing successful teams and portfolios, he currently advises companies and funds such as venture capital, growth equity, and impact on strategy and financing. Welcome to the Swiss Capricorn podcast, Fulvio Macarone. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much for having me.
Fulvio, I would like to start the podcast with a question. I always ask this question, all of my guests, what was your first encounter in the digital world in your life? Do you remember that?
Yes, I remember. It was a long time ago because I might not look, but I'm very old. It was back in the late 70s, 80s, when I had access to the first computers. Basically, the first one I really had access to was a Commodore 64, like a lot of people, apart the usual very early games like Pong. The real access to the digital world, let's say a little bit more complex, was at school, where we trained and it was part of our training to learn how to program in COBOL. So it was a very interesting experience, and also some basic. And this experience was interesting because I can remember clearly those rooms full of computers. So there was this room full of small computers, which were the early PC. It was a Swiss brand developed by the EPFL or unit at the EPFL. It was called Smacky. And we had this room full of Smackies. But strangely enough, nobody was going there because nobody knew exactly what to do. But this was the unique Swiss, let's say, personal computer development that there was. But those were my first encounters, really. Mm-hmm. So mainframe, compilation of programs and things like that. Mm-hmm. So,
Fulvio, you have a vast experience in investing as an investor and also investing in companies. Mm-hmm. What do you normally look for when you invest in a company?
So for me, one of the most important elements is the execution risk linked to the entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. You can have not any product, because you have to assess the product and all the technicalities, the market, all those elements, as well as the financial part of it. But I would say, besides those material elements, the most important one is not material, is basically the entrepreneur and his capacity to reduce the execution risk, because there is an execution risk. So you have to judge the person in front of you if he is able to really lead this company where it should be led. This admitting that the product and the rest works. But really, for me, the human factor is the biggest element that I look for. And through time, you start to have some experience in that. There is no real book.
Mm-hmm. So reduce the execution risk. Can you maybe give an example? When you talk to an entrepreneur, and what would be an example where there's a high execution risk or a low one?
So for me, for example, in my past, we made some investments in companies where, let's say, there was either a bad alignment between the entrepreneur and the investors, in terms of governance or in terms of financial construction. Or there was an issue with the entrepreneur itself and its background. So, for example, Execution risk is probably higher if you have someone who is an older entrepreneur who mm-hmm. never did the entrepreneur before and mm-hmm. launches his entrepreneurship in a late stage mm-hmm. in his mm-hmm. life. It's a higher risk of execution. Mm-hmm. You're a different person when you're 50 than mm-hmm. when you're mm-hmm. 25 out of the university, mm-hmm. And so the execution risk there is mm-hmm. very important. And we just had that with one company in mm-hmm. Switzerland, where indeed the personality proved to be the big problem mm-hmm. because the people were thinking in terms of they were coming from a corporate mm-hmm. background mm-hmm. where they had probably success and they had this good idea, but mm-hmm. they were working in terms of budgets. They mm-hmm. were, it was ingrained into them. Mm-hmm. They were not working in terms of raising capital, mm-hmm. etc. So despite the fact that they were a startup, mm-hmm. they were not mm-hmm. working alongside mm-hmm. us as mm-hmm. an investor, and it was a misalignment. They mm-hmm. were considering us as provider mm-hmm. of a budget. Mm-hmm. And so the budget is finished. Mm-hmm. Where is the new budget? Mm-hmm.
When did you find that out, that there was a misalignment throughout the process? Was it at the beginning or in the
mid-stage?
No,
it was really the speed at which they consumed mm-hmm. the investment. It was very peculiar because mm-hmm. they were not behaving like a startup. They were mm-hmm. behaving like a corporate, so spending okay. on a lot of things which would have not been the priority mm-hmm. in a startup.
So you saw this corporate DNA, which was a complete misalignment with
yes.
the startup phase.
Okay. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And misalignment mm-hmm. is important.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I wanted to ask you in this context, would you rule out, for example, somebody who comes out of a big multinational mm-hmm. company and wants to build his own business? And
no.
let's say he's, 40, 45?
Yeah. Right? No. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. surely not. Mm-hmm. So what I'm saying on that specific kind mm-hmm. of entrepreneur is that they have to be sure that they understand what it means mm-hmm. to be on a startup. They can have mm-hmm. very good technological mm-hmm. Knowledge. Mm-hmm. They can be very good. But, you know, you have worked for a big corporate. You mm-hmm. had some for X years and you had some habits, mm-hmm. right? I mean, working for a corporate mm-hmm. and I worked for big companies.
Unlimited budget.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, you're a certain comfort. Mm-hmm. Your pay, first of all. You don't need to go and ask for mm-hmm. capital. Mm-hmm. And also you have the privilege of being someone recognized within the company. You have a status.
Sales is easier.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then you become an entrepreneur and you see that selling it, even if it's a very good idea, then your status and all the glittery things that are linked to that start to disappear. And also the startup is like crossing the ocean on a sailing boat, which is old and sometimes has holes into it, and you have to be able to when corporate for me, you have this big boat which crosses the ocean. Okay, sometimes you have a technical problem, but you have this inertia, and this is valid for the entrepreneur and for the. So it's not. I don't want to be discriminatory, but I say for me, it's it's a point of attention when I look at things.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other red flags when you see when you talk to or you watch out for when you talk to founders and entrepreneurs?
In terms of red flag, I think the biggest one is the capacity to resist frustration.
Mm-hmm.
So because frustration comes in various forms and shapes. You have frustration with your hopefully clients or likely clients, and you have to sell your product, and you have to a lot of pushback, pushbacks that are more or less nice, and because you're convinced, right? Your product is great, and then you also have to resist frustration with investors. I think with investors is the hardest one for many entrepreneurs because they have in front of them financially interested people. In the end, you can sell your idea, but the person in front of you have to keep in mind that he has to make money in the end, unless it's philanthropy. And this sometimes creates a misalignment of interest, which can translate in other issues. So for me, this frustration, the capacity to resist this frustration in terms of contact with investors is really an important one. But you discover it whilst advancing into the process.
So this resistance to frustration, that's very, very important.
Exactly, because you have a lot of pushbacks and resistance to that and is important.
So the communication with the entrepreneur, founder, and the investors, that's a very crucial thing.
Yeah, and also presenting your company, you have to... You know, you have to be able to go out there and be part of the ecosystem, present as much as possible your company and not be frustrated because a lot of people will give you pushbacks telling you that your product is not interesting because it's you don't have any future or whatever. Because maybe the almost last one that you have met outside the building is the person that will give you enough money to go forward. So you need to go and keep pushing.
Just keep pushing.
Yeah.
Fulvio, I also have a question. This is also something that I talk a lot with entrepreneurs is the issue of bootstrapping or at the beginning taking on external investors. Is there one way to or one answer to this, or does it really depend on the business model?
Okay. Well, if you have the capacity to bootstrap yourself up until a certain point, and then I guess we can put into bootstrapping friends, fools, and family, as we say, that's great because you don't need to deal with other people. And then at the beginning, certainly your first contacts would be business angels, maybe some VCs who do early stage. But it's in any case, it is important to see that you're aligned with the people who give you money, because even if it's your family, right? I mean, after a while, when they start losing money, it's always more difficult as a conversation.
Absolutely.
But bootstrapping is good if
we're able to do it.
Yeah,
it's
and I can I can add, maybe we can consider also bootstrapping being able to get non-dilutive financing. I mean, Switzerland is a bit more difficult, but in Europe, there are a lot of sources of non-dilutive financing for companies, a lot of entities that give subventions and so on. So yeah, you have to go as far as you can with that, because when you get external investors, then it's you know, you have to be more careful, alignment of interest, and you give away some a little bit of power, obviously.
Scaling is always a big topic for every entrepreneur. This is a issue that everybody has to deal with at some stage. Well, where do you see the challenges in scaling a company?
What I've seen as the biggest challenge when you start going from a startup, if I can say so, to a scale-up, is really the phase where you start structuring your sales. And for me, sales recruitment is very often underestimated because you see in business plans, okay, I hire sales. Let's say I hire five sales, and then I will sell in this country. But the problem is this, the hiring process, and you probably know, the hiring process of a good sale takes much longer than that. And also the failure rate of those hirings, in the sense that you hire someone and he will leave after 1 month, is very high as well. And so this the scaling up for me, the big, big problem is really creating your sales process, creating your sales team, and handing over your product, your baby to them, and so that they can also be as representative as you are with the client.
So also letting go, basically.
Yeah, there is a part of letting go when you do that. And then for me, the sales aspect is the most important.
And this letting go process, is that a challenge also for business owners?
Certainly, because I've heard very recently a company in Switzerland was saying, oh, but only me can sell that. I don't know, it was the CEO. But the problem, he was CEO, he was the head sales, he was doing everything. So everything was revolving around him. If, like we say in English, he goes under a bus, the expression. No, but there is a key man risk, and you cannot grow with that. It's one
is it a common thing that you see in startups, or is
it's a challenge for all startups. It's the more structured and advanced they are anticipating it and hiring and creating you know, a team to sell here, a team to sell there. But very often it's a difficult process for the entrepreneur less experienced, I would say.
I founded my startup and I'm looking for board members that can help me, also help me grow. What are the challenges in finding the right board members?
It's a very good question. It's one of my hobbies, if I can say, because I've lived through so many situations where the board has been probably the main cause for failure.
Oh, really?
That for me, it's really essential to have a board which understands and functions. And your board very often is and this is the standard. Huh? I'm not saying everybody, but what you see normally is a board. You have the founders. You have maybe a business angel, and then you start to grow. You have a VC and some other VCs, and you start to have a maybe one independent director who probably is the chairman. And then you start to have this group of people. Mm-hmm. But the investors, the VC, they have one target, is to make an exit. And depending on which business you are, your commercialization horizon is longer than maybe other businesses. Software is very short, but if you do industrial products, it's quite long. But the life cycle of a fund, you have 4 years of investment period, and then maybe 4 years to do exits. So after four to 5 years, all the funds will start to come to you, knock on your door, on your board, start to talk about exits, and maybe you're not ready. So if all those people on the board, they kind of congregate together to persuade to you persuade you that you have to do an IPO or to do an exit, whatever, it probably is the wrong thing for you to do, right?
As an entrepreneur,
for the company. I've seen those misalignments, or another example, if you're a young company, you have a board with two business angels on board, and one founder, this is your board, very early, and the business angels, they don't want to raise capital because they would be diluted. So they kind of...
So there's a conflict of interest.
Yeah, they want to they want to raise debt. But if you're very early, raise debt, convertible, yes, but then you have certain limitations.
So is often then also the investor part of the board? Does that happen often?
Yes. I would say, fortunately and unfortunately, if you invest, you go to the board, right? I mean, at least you ask to go to the board. But what I've seen in very, let's say, in the few companies I've seen recently is that they are very picky on who goes on the board. So even the if you come and say, okay, I invest so much, I want to be on the board, they will probably do some pushback or ask you to be an observer or whatever. Because... It shouldn't be an automatic thing that you are investing in a company and you're on the board. The board function, mostly in Switzerland, it's the board that manages the company at one point, right? They have the responsibility of the company. And
even in implementing the CEO,
they can remove the management delegation and take over. They have all the power. So it all depends how you manage. This is another very important thing. If you have a board, and maybe you cannot avoid having people on board, try to preserve your decision power in the shareholder agreement, because there is this danger that they take over and they might not decide what is best for the company.
Yeah. Wasn't it the case with Apple, Steve Jobs? I think, didn't he get...
He got fired
from his own company.
Exactly. But that can happen.
That can happen to anybody.
Right? Yeah, exactly. But the people who can decide those kind of extreme measures, it's the board. So it's for that reason, I think if you can go through a selection process, to a discussion process, etc. I've seen a few companies which are very, very selective. So you don't come on my board if you're not invested so much. Or you cannot come on the board because I just want people who bring some value. And, you know, you would be surprised. I mean, some people are ready to not to go on the board as long as you have information or things like that.
Who would be the perfect board member then? Let's say I have a IT, I founded an IT consulting company in a certain field. Mm. Who would be then, would it be more somebody who's involved in sales, operational experience, maybe legal? Mm. What would be the perfect board member for my company?
I mean, if you're in IT, for example, yeah. I will take nowadays what I see yeah. and mm. hear is young companies who say, okay, my future board will be. Mm-hmm. And very often mm. The requirements for the future board member mm-hmm. are an IA specialist. Mm-hmm. It may more AI in English, mm-hmm. French is AI, and so AI specialist mm-hmm. is very often something that companies mm-hmm. look for, mm-hmm. someone who can help them mm-hmm. develop the AI part of their business, mm-hmm. or also the financial part, help them raise capital, mm-hmm. manage their finances, mm-hmm. etc. That's very often. And otherwise, people who can bring contacts in the market, mm-hmm. sales, who have some experience in structuring. Mm-hmm. But I would say in terms of typology, the mm-hmm. I think the best people you can have on your board probably are people who have already been entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm. Now, when it comes to recruiting the best talent in the market, what are the challenges that especially growth companies have mm-hmm. if you don't have a big name such as Microsoft, yeah. Google, and cannot pay these big, enormous salaries?
Yeah, fight for talent is, mm-hmm. is a very important thing nowadays, mm-hmm. and it's difficult to recruit. Mm-hmm. But thanks God, the market is relatively open mm-hmm. right now, even mm-hmm. in Switzerland. And you can also be using remote mm-hmm. alternatives. But in terms of recruiting, I would say to be attractive are many things that should be considered, but I think also work conditions, certainly. Remuneration in the sense that you, at the beginning, at least, you should have some incentive for mm-hmm. some people to stay on board, a bit in terms of shares very mm-hmm. often. So that's very important also to make the people feel that they mm-hmm. are there. Mm-hmm. Because very often at the beginning, you cannot pay mm-hmm. very high fixed salaries mm-hmm. or bonus. But mm-hmm. I think participation in the company mm-hmm. and also work conditions are very, very important, mm-hmm. besides the fact that the company has a great future or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Is there anything else that companies can do to retain also the candidates? Maybe something like give them accountability, responsibilities. Is there anything else that you experience?
Yeah, yeah, I agree. You should mm-hmm. Give them a vision of mm-hmm. and some outlook on mm-hmm. what they can become within the company. Mm-hmm.
So vision,
exactly. Mm-hmm. So if they you know you're there at the mm-hmm. early stage. Well, mm-hmm. if the company mm-hmm. grows, you will probably mm-hmm. become. Mm-hmm. Responsible for mm-hmm. That with some employees, mm-hmm. with mm-hmm. you, or take this responsibility. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's important that people can project themselves mm-hmm. also in the company.
So how important is it that the company leader or founder also communicates this vision? Like, what's your experience there?
No, they do.
They do?
They do. I think most of the companies, they communicate with mm-hmm. their employees. And there is a good understanding of what the company does. But mm-hmm. again, it's more difficult if you have a company which has remote sales in another mm-hmm. country, yeah. Remote IT in mm-hmm. another country. Mm-hmm. Then you, mm-hmm. you have people on hire, right? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. are they really part mm-hmm. of your organization or mm-hmm. not? How close they are to your mm-hmm. company or not? Mm-hmm. So it's very complicated. Mm-hmm. But if you have the traditional mm-hmm. everybody in-house view, I think that mm-hmm. the founders very often mm-hmm. live by this communication on their vision.
And Fulvio, what is your opinion on how can candidates stay relevant in this very competitive tech market? What is your opinion there?
I mean, it seems like something very obvious what I'm going to say, but really someone who's very curious. I mean, mm-hmm. if sometimes you have nowadays candidates who are a bit slow to adapt to things that are coming up with AI agents, etc., and they are, and I'm talking broadly, I'm not mm-hmm. tech candidates, just broadly, and you see that they are already a bit lost. they are not working with AI, and there are more than what we think. Mm-hmm. They are late adapters, adopters. They are a bit behind, and they don't integrate those tools as part mm-hmm. of their daily working process mm-hmm. in whatever manner. I mean, you can use those tools to do. Brainstorming to process a document, etc. But some people are I'm surprised sometimes that they didn't have the curiosity to download a ChatGPT free version or another one to try, right? Mm-hmm. And to see. So this curiosity has to be there because things are evolving so fast that you will fall behind very fast. Mm-hmm. And it takes time, but you can integrate it in your life and play with things, take courses, read. I think let's not be too behind the curve. Mm.
So having this curiosity in order to integrate the new technology that's
because
in the market.
Because funny enough, it's not so difficult either. We're not talking about programming in COBOL, which is heavy, not very great and fun. We're talking about things which are very modular, they are done in such a way that you can understand without knowing the deep technicality of the thing.
I wonder, Fulvio, like smaller companies with this emergence of new technology, how will... is it a benefit, for example, also for smaller companies because you have all this emergence of more solopreneurs or entrepreneurs in the market? How can they use this technology to benefit in the market?
Well, I think it accelerates the thought process on how you develop your company, but it accelerates also market research. It doesn't prevent you from doing real market research, but... Oh. It can help you in the process of developing your company, setting up the right documents, having the right things at the right place. You still need to intervene. You still need to correct. But you can interact with AI programs to get to a certain level of input that will save you time and maybe make you discover other elements if you don't know this this aspect. And I think it's very interesting. I mean, I think still today, I think some of the generative models in terms of, I see a lot of people creating generative models on purpose that, considering that you feed them with some information, about what you want to do. They will generate a business plan for you, probably generate a presentation. But what I've seen as a result is it's not yet, or most of them, something that you can use as such. Mm-hmm. I mean, it has probably written a long document that it would have taken you hours, and it will take you less time to just correct and adapt, but you still need to do some work. But I'm in no doubt that tomorrow those things will be very close to perfect, and also in terms of style and things. But nowadays, I see there is still some work.
Fulvio, what is your opinion on remote work? Because when I recruit, for example, tech people for tech positions, the first question I always hear is remote working 100%? You know, can I stay home? So I was wondering, what is your opinion there?
Well, I think there is a slight change from the employer point of view. There is a slight change of positioning. On the other side, if you're a young company, sometimes you want to hire a talent that you don't have at your disposal where you are. And it's a compromise that you have to do, right? If someone wants to work remotely, it may be something that you have to consider at the beginning. But nevertheless, I will be careful of hiring only remote people because then you don't create this spirit, this company spirit. Mm-hmm. It's important to meet together. So I would say remote for me is a couple of days per week, but at least one day you should meet.
So still get together and develop a culture in the
because,
company.
Exactly, but mostly for that. Because otherwise, I don't see how you can develop a culture if everybody is on remote. And independently from what you do, be it technical or be it, I don't know, human resources or whatever, if you work remotely, you kind of lose control with the company, the company culture. There is nothing that replaces the feeling of seeing how people really behave, right?
And for social reasons as well, right?
Absolutely. Also, I think that for, in terms of mental health, working at home, it's fine for a while, but then it starts to be heavy.
Absolutely. Now, AI is changing the world. We're living in a world that changes so fast as never before in human history. What kind of jobs do you think will disappear? What kind of jobs will stay? Mm. And what kind of jobs do you think will be newly created?
Well, let's start with the first one. I think it's a difficult question because the obvious answer that comes to my mind would be administrative jobs. Because so far, the AI models are very good at acting on pre-established processes that are given to them. So if you give them a process or something that they can work for with, those models will execute on that. And providing that they do the right thing and there are no errors, they will execute on that. So you can, it can go very broadly, this kind of concept. It can go from administrative tasks to even low-end client relationships. So AI can be a vocal assistant answering your question at your bank. And if we get to a situation where you have efficient and low-error systems that can replace humans in contacts with clients, which are maybe not the the big clients, but the more retail ones, I'm sure that the companies will fall for that because it's less expensive and so on. But they should not forget that the client, if you treat him bad, then he will walk away. So you have to be careful that this system that you put into place works. That's why at the beginning, I think the feedback will not be great, but it's improving. So I think, unfortunately, most of those jobs are at risk. Everything which is process, I think that we saw in many studies, they talk about the legal aspect, they talk about the financial aspect. I can imagine that some of the functions, but nevertheless, they will be more financial and legal. I think in the first stage, they will not replace completely. They will be tools that will help go faster.
Interesting. Now I also have a question so that our viewers and our listeners get to know you also a little bit better. What is your superpower, the area you are a little bit better than maybe other people? What will you say?
I think that one of my superpower is to, I'm like a truffle dog. I like to do, to search and do investigative work. Mostly I'm asked to go and search in a situation that is complicated, complex, with very often governance issues, financial issues, and I like this digging work. I like to put the things on the table and also solve problems that are not aligned with the right governance.
So a bit of a Sherlock Holmes in
you. Yeah, it's a bit of a Sherlock Holmes attitude, but with the, I mean, this is my personal aspect of sense of justice.
And is there any person, famous person that you particularly admire, or maybe several, and also why?
Yeah, I think one person, I don't know if I admire him, but certainly is someone who I have a lot of, I would say, respect and curiosity. And this person is not an entrepreneur, but he's a kind of entrepreneur. He's Winston Churchill. No, it's a bit outside the model of entrepreneurship. But if you look at his life, he is like an entrepreneur. He has been an entrepreneur all his life. He has, you know, came from a dysfunctional family, was rejected by everyone, frustration. then say, okay, I'm going to, you know, enlist and go to South Africa in the Boer Wars, made prisoner. He supposedly evaded, wrote a story about his evasion, became famous. Then we know the story, become He was then in the government, First World War. He changed the navy and the from steam engines to petrol engines for most of the boats. So it was an industrial revolution. Then he pivoted. I don't know how many times of parties. So he went from one party to the other. So people were considering him a little bit crazy, but he was. I mean, he was probably had some mental issues. But and he was almost nearly financially broke before he was again taken into the government at the beginning of the Second World War.
He was so he had many ups and downs and crises.
Constantly ups and downs, and he was depressed. He was. You know, thanks to, thanks God that he had a painting as a cure. So he was quite a good painter. And but it was really a very complex personality. But in the end, he had always one target. I think was that he wanted to defend the interest of his country. Voilà, that was his vision, right or wrong, but at least it served for a bird. But what I like is this survivor. It's a constant survivor. This guy could have died, I don't know how many times, but he continued with all his excesses and did great things in the end. He inspired a lot of people.
Absolutely, very impactful. Is there a mission statement, a credo or a motto you live by?
Yeah. I won't spare. I will spare you the Latin version because my Latin.
I took French. I didn't take Latin.
I took a bit of Latin, but a long time ago. It's who guards the guardians. So basically, who guards the guardians for me is an interesting sentence because you take as granted that the people you have given power to, or people who have been given power to, if it's not you, they do the right thing. And it's not always the case. Sometimes when they have power, people behave strangely.
Sometimes
they try to consider, you know, if you will give some money to someone, then he considers it his money, not the money of his investors. I mean, every just in terms of mentality. And you have, I'm very cautious about that, that, you know, you should have always a doubt about who really oversees the people you have given, you have been given power to.
Yeah, I think Switzerland has this attitude a little bit, a bit this non-conformist, anti-government little attitude.
Exactly. I mean, Switzerland is a good case where it's dispersed a little bit, but more centralized organization, obviously, you give power. Companies are not federative, are mostly vertical, even though you then it may be more flat. But whatever flat structure you're told, you still have a boss, and if the boss is not the right person, I always monitor that there is a good behavior on that side.
Absolutely. Final question, Fulvio. How will AI improve your life in 2 years?
I think AI will definitely improve. I don't know if it's my life, but maybe. But I think in the medical space, it will help a lot of people. With mostly also in the mental disability side or learning problems, kids problems. That's very close to my personal interest as well. Working with trauma, kids trauma, and this is something that is of high interest to me from personal side. And I think that AI there can help those kids cure themselves into an interactive universe. I've seen some developments recently, mostly with autism, for example. But for mental health, I think AI is can be a very powerful tool. AI in general, we're talking about virtual environments and so on.
So AI technology can have a huge impact also for good products that will change, have a positive impact on
absolutely.
The world.
Yeah, yeah, there are applications that will be very good. And then, I mean, personally, it will change my, I go back to our earlier question, it will change my way of working only if I adapt and continue to learn how to do it. So if I don't improve my way of using some of the aspects, then I will fall behind.
Fulvio Macarona, venture capital, private equity investor, and board member. Thank you so much for this wonderful, interesting
talk. Thank you, Jacob.
I wish you all the best in your future in investments and everything else
in
your life.
Likewise.
And wish you nothing but success and nothing less.
Thank you. Yeah. Likewise to you. And thank you very much for having me here for this very interesting discussion.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Capricorn Connect. People. Potential. Technology.